Welcome to Recurring Nightmares, episode 22. I am Chris, as always, joined by Jeff.
Hello.
And this month, we've got a pair of San Francisco-based terrorism films. They're action films that take place in San Francisco and involve terrorists and Alcatraz.
Yeah, we got the Alcatraz through line.
Yeah. You know?
There's some connection here.
Yes. Yes.
I see what you did.
And I mean, I based it off of the explanation of The Enforcer, because I had not seen that film. And the other film's The Rock, but we'll get back to them shortly. But before we do that, we watched some movies. We're going to keep it a little bit light here. But Jeff saw a few new movies. I saw a new movie, and I watched a series of films. So, Jeff, what do you want to kick us off with?
I've had a lot of free time lately, as you know. I've seen a ton of shit, but yeah, I'm just gonna tell you about the new stuff. So I saw Nightmare Alley, the new Guillermo del Toro movie that just got added to HBO Max.
Mm-hmm.
That's pretty awesome.
It's only like theaters, a month old or something like that.
Yeah. Bombed. So it was not one of those day and date HBO Max things. It just like came there after its tragic theatrical run. They put it up against like Spider-Man, if I recall correctly, which
I think it was came out the exact same same day as Spider-Man, so not a good run there.
No, but I was happy to finally see it. And have you seen this movie yet?
Not.
Okay.
I've kind of been waiting because I don't know, the trailers looked really cool, and then I didn't really hear a whole lot about it when it came out, so I was like, I'm not sure I'm gonna jump into it.
So, I went and watched the original from 1947. Someone had uploaded it to YouTube. This is, you know, back before this new one came out. So in December, I watched the original Nightmare Alley, and having seen that, I was like, it's okay. Like, it was an okay movie, but now that I know everything that's going to happen, I really didn't have any desire to see the remake. I was just like, this is an okay thing. And any, like, clips that I had seen of the new Nightmare Alley was basically just doing the original, almost exactly. Like, it's just, oh, yeah, I remember that scene in the original. So,
mm-hmm.
My urgency to see it like dropped off, but then I finally watched it when it came to HBO, and I think Del Toro did a great job updating it for today. It still takes place kind of back then, and I was right that it does follow the story exactly, but I don't know, Del Toro and his cast were able to breathe enough life into it for me to really, I think it was a really pretty awesome movie. Again, wasn't totally expecting that, not loving the original. But yeah, it follows the same story, but it just looks gorgeous. Bradley Cooper is great in the lead. It's actually pretty surprised he didn't get an Oscar nomination for it. And I guess one little thing, it's not a horror movie. It's a story about a con artist.
Okay.
He like joins the carnival, and he like starts at the bottom working there, and he learns tricks from the people that have been working the carnival a long time, and he develops like his own, it's kind of a mentalist act where he'll like be blindfolded, and someone in the audience will hold up like a watch, and he'll say, oh, you're holding a watch. It's kind of what his act is. But of course all these things are scams, and that's kind of like the themes of the movie. Forgot where the hell I was going with this. Oh, the one thing that, again, not horror, but Del Toro, he's a horror guy, and he manages to sneak some pretty good gore into this for being a movie that's really, basically a drama. But yeah, it's a high recommend. It's a really good movie from last year. Del Toro did a great job updating it.
Nominated for Best Picture.
Yeah.
So it's up there. Yeah, I think I'll give it a shot. I've heard since it hit HBO, you watched it, and I've seen some other people on film Twitter talk about it.
Yeah.
They seem pretty high on it.
Kind of taking that path that the like Last Duel did, where it was like nobody saw it in the theater, and then once
Right.
people got around to seeing it, they thought I was pretty good. But yeah, I hope you enjoy it. I thought, is it my favorite Del Toro movie? No, but it was much better than I expected.
Nice.
What else? I've seen. Oh, the other big one. My first time being in the theater since Halloween, I went and saw the new Jackass, Jackass Forever. It is another Jackass movie. People are trying to make it out. It got really positive reviews for once, compared to the other films. And some of like the critical like acclaim for it is trying to make it out to be a little bit more than I think what it is. It's guys hitting each other in the nuts. But there is a camaraderie there that it does come across, and you could, like a lifelong friendship type deal that comes across. I think this being like a full, I think it's like 12 years after the last one. It's been a while since Jackass 3.
2010.
So 12 years. These guys are older now. A lot of them are in their 50s, and I think that adds an element to it because it adds like some more stakes to the stupid shit that they do.
Yeah,
Like,
these guys aren't turning around. Like, they're not 20. They're not even
no.
30 anymore. Like, they're not turning over these injuries very quickly.
And that comes across in the movie. Like, you could tell, like, this one was a hit, so that I could see them going, oh no, we're gonna do another, but I don't know how many more they have left in them, because
You could only, when you get
Only.
injured when you're younger, it's recovery is a little bit faster than when you're in your 50s.
Yeah, and I.
And I don't want to see any of these guys get like permanently hurt.
Yeah, like that's the fear, right? Is that like an injury actually happens and it like permanently disables one of them, and that's not going to be funny at that point, like.
No. I mean, they've put themselves through so much hell. Dude, I've been watching a bunch of Jackass shit on YouTube, and they're doing interviews promoting the movie. And someone asked Knoxville, like, what his worst, like, longest lasting injury was. And he said that he broke his penis and had to use a catheter twice a day for 3.5 years. Now,
Jesus.
just. Having surgery recently, I had a catheter, and let me tell you, when that thing came out, that was not pleasant at all. I couldn't imagine having to do it, like put one in and out of my penis, several times a day for years. Like, I would never do any Jackass shit again after that. I'd probably just kill myself at some point. Like, Jesus, too much.
Yeah, I'm just gonna lay in bed. You just leave it there until I'm good,
Like,
okay?
seriously. There is new members of the cast in this new one, and they're younger, like the new generation coming in. I think there's like two or three people that they added. They have the first girl member. They have this one kid. He makes a great addition, not so much for what he does, but because he has a dad who his dad is an ex-con. Not afraid of anything, right? But they sucker his kid's dad into doing some stuff. And the way he explains it, he's like, my dad is afraid of spiders, snakes. He's like, basically anything you wouldn't see in the hood, my dad is afraid of. And so they get this big kind of, tough guy, ex-con guy doing some of this stuff where he like passes out. He's so scared of like a tarantula or whatever. So yeah, I like the new additions to the cast, especially that one kid and his dad. And I don't know, it's a fun movie. Of like, if you like Jackass, I'd say it's on par. Actually, I think this might be the best one because of the certain elements to it, like the them aging. And boy, but just because they've aged, they've not let up on the cruelty that they inflict on each other.
There is really, really nasty genital trauma throughout this whole movie. Like, one, it's like the most dicks you're ever going to see in a movie. But the things that they do to the people's dicks and balls are just like, dude, horrible. So I don't want to like spoil anything big, but one thing is like Steve-O gets his dick and balls covered in bees and they sting the shit out of him. And they show you close-ups of his balls afterwards and he's like pulling, you know, stingers out of his balls.
Oh, Jesus.
Yeah, dude. Brutal. Some brutal stuff in here, but I don't know. Fun as always, I think. It's one I recommend going to see in the theater. I saw it in the theater, but I went and saw it at matinee. Sad I didn't get to go at like a Friday night with, you know, a bigger crowd. But the, you know, 10 of us or so that were there, we're all laughing our ass off the whole movie.
Good.
But yeah, it's fun. That's it on the movie front. I did want to bring up the show Euphoria on HBO. This is a show that came out, the first season came out in 2019. And I remember at the time being like the only person that watched that show. I remember actually on Movie Dudes telling you about it. Like, hey, you should check out this new show on HBO, Euphoria. It had a 2.5 year hiatus and now it's back with its second season. It must have caught on sometime during the pandemic. That show is huge now on Twitter. Like, it's just, yeah, it Sunday nights.
Very, yeah, big.
Sunday nights, it's, you know, there's the fun of watching the show and then seeing all the reactions that I see on Twitter. Not from, like, really anybody I follow, but Twitter just kind of pushing the topic towards me. I don't know how any of that algorithm shit works, but I see a lot of Euphoria tweets afterwards. And it's apparently like it's a huge hit for HBO. They renewed it for season 3 already. But yeah, I guess the interesting aspect to me, and to me, this is like appointment TV. It's very exciting every week. Really cool filmmaking in it. Like, just great cinematography. Individual episodes really seem to be paying homage to like certain movies. So like the one that just aired this week really reminded me of a Safdie Brothers movie, like the guys that made Uncut Gems, mm-hmm. and that movie Good Time, where what's his name, Robert Pattinson's like running around New York for the whole movie, like constantly running. Well, we get an episode here where our main character, you know, she gets caught using drugs again by her mom, and she's just out running the whole episode. It totally feels like a Safdie Brothers movie. You know, the showrunners and stuff are not shy about saying that, you know, hey, we love this, we're copying it, you know. So high recommend for me, very high. Like, I think this is a really great show. It's just so interesting because a lot of the people that I follow on Twitter, let me put it this way, I don't know anyone that watches the show. Like, as far as popular as it is, I don't know anyone that watches it. And a lot of the people that don't watch it seem to have opinions about it on Twitter. And a lot of it is about how I don't watch this show because I'm not in high school. And to me, I don't know what you think of that. Like, I think it's kind of a weird angle to go. Like,
yeah, like who cares? If you're not in high school. Yeah. If it's a good story, it's a good story. Like,
yeah. I don't know. There's a weird thing going on with that where this is for kids or whatever. Or I think, you know,
people might be uncomfortable too because it's showing these quote unquote kids, you know, having sex and using drugs and you know, there's nudity and lots of male nudity too on the show. But I don't know. I know that the actors are adults, so it's not like weird me out at all. I don't know. What were you gonna say, Chris?
Yeah, I mean, I do wonder if maybe some of it is that side of it where it's like, you know, they're just uncomfortable because it's, they are adults, but they're adults portraying, you know, underage people, and we're getting it. You know, I have not watched it, so but I have heard like, oh, there's so much dick in this show.
There is a lot of dick in the show. It's more dick than Yeah, you see on any between Jackass and Euphoria, there's a lot of dick. Like that, so the opening of season two, there's a scene with a strip club owner. He's in the back of the strip club, and he's getting a blowjob. And this lady walks in with a gun. The stripper or whatever that was giving him a blowjob, she like backs off, and he's just sitting there with his dick out, and she shoots him in both legs. And it's something I've never seen in anywhere. It's like this fucking big flopping dick with like, you know, gore happening on both sides of it. I don't know. It's just like, I'm like, what the fuck? But yeah, anyways, I wanted to bring that up. Just, I thought it was interesting, kind of the course that series has taken, where it's become extremely popular, but a lot of people our age seem reluctant to check it out. I think if you're not watching it, you're missing out. It's a really exciting show.
It's on my watch list. Just, there's so much shit to watch.
You know, luckily, if you do hop in, you don't have a lot to catch up with. I think the seasons are like 8 episodes, you know.
Yeah.
So, anyways, that's kind of it for me. Again, I've watched tons of stuff, but keeping it to stuff that's like new and relevant.
All right. Well, I also watched a movie that just came out, Return to the Theater, for the first time since I think Halloween.
I want to see this. You said they're talking about Moonfall.
Yeah, I saw Moonfall, the new Roland Emmerich movie. I have a soft spot for Roland Emmerich. Like, I enjoy his movies. They aren't necessarily good, but I almost always have fun with them. Stargate, Independence Day, 98 Godzilla, The Patriot, Day After Tomorrow. Like, he had a run where it was like, these are really fun films.
2012, I like that one.
Yeah, 2012, 10,000 BC, okay. White House Down he did, which I think kind of gets lost between Olympus Has Fallen.
Yeah.
Because they're very similar White House invasion movies. And then, you know, he did Independence Day 2, which wasn't great. And he did Midway in 2019, which was kind of more historical. You know, it was about the Battle of Midway. But, you know, he is known for blowing shit up. Like, that's what he does. And he generally does a pretty good job of it.
Yeah.
Moonfall is an absurd premise. The moon has been knocked out of orbit. And it is coming towards the Earth, where it will eventually impact and destroy the Earth. So think Armageddon, but not an asteroid, the fucking moon. Like,
isn't it similar too, where they're like, they have to find somebody, like the person that they have to find to fight this, it makes no sense. Like, you know, in Armageddon, it was like drillers, they needed oil drillers.
Yeah, well, in this, it's like this disgraced astronaut who was in space on a mission, and he says that like this alien swarm, this something attacked him and his crew. And NASA basically painted him as a nut. And so that's Patrick Wilson. He's been disgraced. And then, the guy who plays Sam Tarly, John Bradley, Sam Tarly from, Game of Thrones. He plays a conspiracy theorist and he's the guy that figures out that the moon is out of orbit. And he also believes that the moon is, a superstructure. So basically it's like a something that's been built. It's not a natural formation. And you probably heard, if you watch any space news, like if you catch any space news, they talk about like, you know, oh, in this galaxy, you know, astronauts, scientists have spotted like some sort of thing out there. They sometimes call it like a super formation or something. We don't know what it is. It's just, it's unnatural. It's also light years away from us, so we can't actually examine it. So people have taken that, spun it around, and Emmerich kind of does that here along with his other co-writers, and they create something goofy. Like, it's just, it's outlandish. It does not quite have the level of destruction that you probably expect from, you know, the guy who did Independence Day or, you know, Day After Tomorrow. But I thought it was fun. Like, it's stupid, but if you're going in expecting, like, a serious sci-fi movie that, you know, takes itself seriously, it does. But I think also Patrick Wilson and Halle Berry and John Bradley, they all kind of know this is dumb. They're giving a good performance with it. They're acting like it's serious, but underneath, you know that they're like, this is stupid as shit.
There's no way you could take this premise.
Right. The whole thing makes zero sense. You know, like a lot of these films, there's a secondary storyline that is maybe not as interesting. You know, they have to have the Earth storyline too, where it's not just the people in space, it's what's happening on Earth. And they do that by following Halle Berry's son and Patrick Wilson's son, who end up together at some point. That stuff's less good, but you know, that's where the destruction, that's where you see this stuff happen. Like, they're up in Colorado and you see asteroids and you see the moon like crest over the horizon, and it just like kind of like and gravity shifts, so like there's some fun like gravity stuff where cars are being sucked towards the moon. Basically, if you're not nailed down, stuff's getting sucked up because gravity is like pulling the other way.
Like, lakes will get sucked up, and then there's like fucking planes flying under them and shit.
Yeah, like, it's like goofy shit like that. Like, it just looks fun. It's like, and if you watch it on a big screen, like, that's where I watch it on like one of those AMC Dolby screens, which are a little bit bigger than the normal screens. It was a good time. Like, I had fun with it. It's what I expected. And I was like, this is good. This is
what you wanted out of it.
It's exactly what I wanted. I'm not sure. Like, I know it's not getting, it got trashed. Like, the reviews basically were destroyed, and it's holding like a 5 on IMDb, which is probably where it belongs. Like, it's a middle of the road. Like, it's not amazing quality, but this is a movie that I would watch again. Like, you put a beer in my hand, throw it on the television, I'll sit around for 2 hours and watch dumb moon shit.
I'm excited to see it. Probably it'll be rental, but like you said, a couple beers. It's funny you mentioned critics riffing on it. I watched Mark Kermode review it, who, I don't know if you know who he is, but he's like a serious, like, British film critic, like an actual film critic. I think he does for the BBC. So I watched his review of it, and he's like, it's like 6 movies happening at once, and it's probably the dumbest thing I've ever seen, but I was grinning ear to ear the whole time.
So it's just fun.
Like, the stuffy film critic kind of gave it glowing praise. I mean, he's dumb, good, but like, good. That's what you expect. That's what you want out of it. Yeah. You know?
I watched a little bit of John Campia's review of it on his show.
That guy.
And like, I like Campia. I think he's gone a little bit too far onto the like
goofball.
But like, I've been following him since he ran the movie blog back like years ago. And I like, generally, like, I think he's knowledgeable about films. I think he's just maybe a little bit too much like with MCU and stuff like that.
He's the tank for the superhero stuff.
Yeah. Like, and to be fair, you're a content creator. That's what brings in the views. Like, but yeah, he was like, he was trashing it with his crew. Like, I guess they all went to go watch it, and I was like, I don't know. But then, like, you know what? Throwing expectations out the window. I'm just gonna go have a good time, and that's exactly what I had. Like, I was like, this is what I want. Like, big stupid movies. I don't need a superhero that's interconnected with 27 other films.
That's like, in fact, what I don't want. I want
give me dumb moon shit.
Yeah, and it's funny too to have him trash it, and then Mark Kermode, this like stuffy, like important film critic, be like, I had a blast with it.
Yeah, and like, look, like that's. I think we've discussed this between our different shows. Like, movies, not every movie is meant to be the same thing. Like, this is pure entertainment.
Yeah.
And that's all it is. It's not trying to tell you anything at all. Like, it's just like, hey, here's the dumb fun adventure. You could shut your brain off if you want. I think leaving it on to question the stupidity of everything is more fun. But I think you know, if you go in with, you know, expectations that you know this is going to be, you know, stupid, you'll have a good time with it.
Sounds like we have a couple of pure fun movies in the theater right now. People should go check out. It sounds like, you know, Jackass doesn't have to make a lot of money, so Jackass is good. They had a successful opening.
Yeah.
It's too bad this thing is flopping, but I think people should go check these out if you're looking just for a fun time.
Yeah, like to me, it was like the movie. I could have gone to see anything, right? Like there's Academy Award nominated films out there right now.
Yeah.
But I just wanted something fun to like go back to the theater for the first time, and that's what this was. So, a couple months absence, it was a good time. Yeah. Had a good time. Laughed. Like, I mean, it's not a movie, it's not a comedy, but like, I'm laughing, people in the crowd are laughing. It was a good time.
Awesome. I'm looking forward to it.
I guess, we picked The Enforcer. It's, you know, the third Dirty Harry movie. I also went back and watched all the Dirty Harry movies, of which I had only seen, I believe, the original before. So a lot of these were first time views. One, I don't think that series is very good.
No, it's not.
I think like maybe the second one is the best, I think, of the bunch. Magnum Force, which is like the dirty renegade cops that are killing people.
I would totally agree. It's probably going to come up in our review of the third film. Yes, yeah, I agree.
We're going to talk about the third one shortly. I think Sudden Impact is terrible. That's the one in 1983.
I kind of like that one because it's weird tonally.
Like, it is very like weird. Like, and it's
goofy sometimes, and then
yeah, it's all over the place. Like,
yeah, yeah, I like that one.
And the Deadpool is also, I think, bad, but it is it's something, man. Like, you were waiting around for me to watch that one because there is a scene. Jim Carrey is in that movie.
Jim Carrey, you know, like,
and like I did not know he was in the movie. Liam Neeson also in the movie, but yeah, Jim Carrey, like he plays like this rock star dude, and they pull I believe it's Welcome to the Jungle by Guns N' Roses. And he like lip syncs through this like crazy ass video. It goes on for about 2 minutes with a robot, like a demon robot thing. And it is out there, like crazy. I had a good time with that. I don't think it's a good movie, but I had a good time with that one. But yeah,
when I was a kid, I loved all these movies. They all kind of mixed together in my head. I didn't know which one was which. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
You don't have to, because there's not like you know, they used to make sequels in a way that it wasn't like MCU. You could just go see a movie and not have to fucking know a million things.
This very much like the series as a whole felt very much like, you know, what if James Bond was a police detective?
Yeah, like it has not aged well. You know, we're gonna be talking about it in depth in a second here, but I'm with you. I don't think these movies hold up that well.
And like you look at it, like 83 was a year before Beverly Hills Cop. And like compared to that film, like it's like Beverly Hills Cop is a fucking amazing. And then the Deadpool is like after Lethal Weapon. I think it comes out the same year as Die Hard.
Yeah, you have to wonder, like, did that feel old when it came out?
Yeah.
You know what I mean? Like, I remember when I was a kid, Deadpool was as good as Dirty Harry. Like, it was like, you know, I'm fucking 6 years old watching these movies, so. And it was a different time, but I have to wonder if, like, adult audiences, like you said, in the same year you're watching Die Hard, how the fuck does Deadpool look next to that?
I think Die Hard came out like 2 weeks after the Deadpool. Like, it's crazy. And I'm glad that Eastwood basically said, like, you know, he was 58 in 1988 when that came out. He was like, no, we're done with this. Like, it would be ridiculous at that point if I go on any longer. And I think, yeah, like, the Deadpool is pretty ridiculous. He kills the villain at the end with a like a gigantic harpoon. It's fucking stupid.
And then, you know, his directing career really takes that off after that. And a lot of people now, it's interesting because he was like a huge star, you know?
Yeah.
And now I think a lot of people younger than us probably think of him as just this old, like, conservative director.
Yeah, they probably only know him from the films he's directed. And then, you know, like, these films haven't aged well, so I don't think they're kind of pulled forward like his westerns were.
The westerns, you know, they're classics. Sergio Leone is a great director. They hold up. They're revered still. This series, I have to imagine, if you're like 5 years younger than us, kind of forgotten. I don't know.
Absolutely,
we're aware of it. I've always been aware of Dirty Harry. It was a dad staple. You know what I mean?
Yes. It probably comes from, like, they grew up watching, you know, Eastwood as a cowboy in those films, and then, like, they brought it forward, you know, basically he plays a cowboy basically in these films, but it just takes place in an urban setting where he is, you know, this rogue cop. So I could see why, like, you know, dads of the time would certainly enjoy it. Like, it just does not pull in 2022.
I do think Magnum Force is still pretty cool, but
yeah, it's a good movie.
Unfortunately, unfortunately for the film we're about to review tonight, I actually did watch Magnum Force before watching The Enforcer, but we'll get into that.
Yeah. One other thing I kind of want to touch on. You brought up Euphoria. Bring up a TV show as well. If you have Apple TV and you like sci-fi, you should watch Foundation, which is based on the book series by Isaac Asimov.
I did hear about this.
It is fantastic. It is like, it is big, it's sprawling, Game of Thrones type, but with galaxies, where you have, you know, this what they call the genetic dynasty, where, you know, clones are being, like, so they have like an emperor and he is cloned. And then he has another clone. Like, they're all the same. So it's basically the same person in charge all the time. But they three clones at a time. They call Day, Dusk, and Dawn. Dawn being the one that will eventually take over. And then there is this whole, like, outward frontier setup of, like, the outer edges of the galaxy. Where they're kind of, like, setting up how to do this creation of a new society out there, and it deals with, like, prophecy and mathematics, and it's crazy. It's all over the place. Lots of fun, very, like, high quality cinematography on it. Like, it looks great. The entire show looks fantastic. It has Apple money behind it, so it's gonna look nice. Like, they're not gonna put something shitty out there. But yeah, like, it, and the series itself is classic sci-fi. Like, Asimov is, you know, well regarded.
Yeah.
I really, really got, I'd watched the first two episodes when they started, when it came out earlier in the year. And then for whatever reason, I didn't get back to it. And then I've been using my lunch break finally at work and watching like an hour of a show. And I've been watching this, and it was great. I can't wait for the second season to eventually hit.
Oh, it's got to keep going.
Yeah. Like, it's not done here. Like, it ends.
You said it was a series of books or
yeah, stories? I believe, a trilogy of books.
Okay,
and
it, cool.
There's also, like, a prequel of, there's, like, a prequel book as well, I believe, that I've actually read the prequel book. That's all I know about this going in. And so they're pulling from, like, all aspects of that, but, I don't think it's not going to be like an 8 season run.
It's gonna it's gonna adapt those. I'm guessing.
Yeah.
Okay.
And you know, I guess like hardcore Asimov fans are not super happy with some of the, like they've made some changes. They like changed the one of the main characters, Gale. They changed it from a man in the book to a woman here. I don't think it matters. And that's what a good adaptation, like, changes things to fit the audience that it's speaking to now. Asimov wrote these like back in the 70s and 80s. Yeah. So you have to make some changes. I think they've done a really good job, and you don't need to have read the books going in. So it's good stuff.
Cool. I have not heard a lot of, I know I've heard about this show somewhere. I can't place where, but, you're first I've heard it recently about it. So, if I still have Apple TV, I guess I'll check it out.
Yeah. I mean, it is, it's a little bit of it's a slow burn, but it does pick up. There's some action in it, some mystery. And I just think the worlds they set up are super interesting. It is not the Mandalorian or the Book of Boba Fett.
too bad. Boba Fett is so good.
what a thing that was.
I've only seen the first two episodes. I didn't like it enough.
Hey, if you want to watch the good episodes, start at episode 5.
I've heard it just kind of turns into the Mandalorian.
Yeah, Boba Fett doesn't show up for two whole episodes. He's just not even in the show.
Well, and that's going to be it then, huh?
Yeah, that's it. Which brings us to our matchup of The Enforcer versus The Rock. Two films kind of take place in San Francisco, deal with terrorists, end up on Alcatraz ultimately, and are oddly exactly 20 years apart, 1976 for The Enforcer and 1996 for The Rock. We're going to kick off with The Enforcer, which is the third Dirty Harry movie.
San Francisco, sprawling, picturesque, dynamic, eighth largest cosmopolitan city in the United States. Like every big city, it has its share of crime and violence.
God! Don't let him kill me!
He wants a car right now!
San Francisco is the only city with a cop like Dirty Harry.
What are you gonna do?
Give him one?
Clint Eastwood is the Enforcer.
The mayor of this pig city has been taken prisoner of war by the People's Revolutionary Strike Force.
What do you want?
You.
What are you protecting these people for? You know how many they've killed?
Sacrifices have to be made, mister.
You got the wrong number, boy. We don't deal in violence.
What do you deal in?
Waiting for all you white honkies to blow each other up so we can move right on in.
You don't give up, do you?
Sometimes.
Not you.
I'll tell you what you are to me, you little man. You're just a maggot who sells dirty pictures.
Harry's got a lady partner. This is a first for him.
Now I want you very slowly to put down that weapon and then on the deck and spread your legs.
Are you kidding me?
First there was Dirty Harry, then Magnum Force, and now Eastwood is back as the Enforcer, the dirtiest Harry of them all.
Directed by James Fargo, who I'm not familiar with.
They had a lot of different, I think it was different directors every time. I think Clint might have done Sudden Impact.
He does the next one. He was actually in a relationship with the star at the time.
So you read? Did you read up about this? He has a very weird love life. That could be like a whole episode to itself.
Yeah.
I was wondering if you, like, when doing your research, like, picked up on any of that, because, like, I find that stuff really weird. Like, what the fuck? Anyways.
Yeah. and then he, like, you know, basically put her in the... What an awkward film that one is. Anyway, he forced her. James Fargo, evidently this was his first, feature film. He would go on to direct some stuff in TV, like The A-Team and... stuff like that. Nothing in his filmography really jumps out at me outside of this one. So kind of a no-name guy at the time. It is a Dirty Harry movie. It stars Dirty Harry. He feels like he's being a little pushed out at this point in time, which is funny because, it's 1976. Like, it's not the storyline here. Actually, I think maybe makes a little more sense if it was 83 or 88 when the next two films take place. They pull him off of detective duty and put him on this advisory board to interview like new detectives. And place them. He doesn't last long there. it's set up just so that they can basically introduce the his female partner, or who will become his female partner.
And, you know, so he could have his little rant about how it's funny how kind of old, you know, but like women joining the force is like the big thing in this.
Yeah, like he doesn't think women can be detectives. He really doesn't think that they should even be cops. And he really doesn't think that they should be detectives here. And he treats her by, I think her name's Bobby. Kate, Inspector Kate Moore, treats her like shit.
Yeah, he grows, you know, of course he grows to respect her as it goes on. You know, she earns it by the end by taking a bullet. Doesn't she die?
Yeah, she's dead. Yeah, she dies. Yeah, he's
but, she earned Dirty Harry's respect in the process, and that's what really matters here.
By dying. I do think by the time they reach Alcatraz, he does have
each other by this point. Yeah. End.
Yeah. There's that whole storyline of, you know, him having to have this female partner. It does kind of go in on the fact that there is there's this group that is threatening to do bad shit. I don't know how to say it. The concept here, it seems very loose. They're not well formed.
It's a terrorist group, but it's like in the same vein as like how in Die Hard those were quote unquote terrorists, but they weren't. You know, like I think it's kind of the same, right? It's like these people really just want money, right? They're pretending. I forgot what they say it's for like the people's cause or some stupid bullshit, but even they're like wink wink, we really just kind of want money.
Yeah,
or we'll start blowing shit up. I think that's kind of what the threat that they give, right?
Basically, it's like very vague. we're gonna start blowing shit up if you don't pay us some money. So to prevent that, they put Harry Callahan back on active duty. And he is to find out where this is all happening, and he has to do it with Inspector Moore, his female partner. And, the story here is so thin that...
Yeah, this is...
There's not really a whole lot, like, going on. It's just like, how about you go investigate this one group that we know of in the area... it's a black militant group. Go investigate them. because we think that might they might be the ones. Turns out they're not.
They like they strike up a deal with the guy there, but the deal doesn't get honored because what is it? The mayor or whatever the politics get involved, and they want to pin it. You know, they want their arrest, and they like just pin it on this black dude.
So the mayor is he's kind of an idiot, but like his like big guy. I don't know if it's the DA or his assistant mayor. Yeah. He's really the one pushing everything, and he basically gets SWAT to invade this guy's group and take him down, which fucks up Harry's investigation.
I mean, they made a deal with the guy. They're trying to collaborate. You know, whatever. Like,
yeah,
use him as a CI or whatever. And yeah, they blow that. Kind of like the only big thing that happens in the whole, like, I'm looking at my notes. I took a bunch of notes, and it's just like that's kind of the only plot point up. And then there's kind of like the ending at Alcatraz, right? Like, I don't know.
Yeah, I mean, I got some out. Like, I mean, across the board, like, nothing of note happens. My notes here are a little kind of all over the place, but like, you know, it starts out, you know, cliche start with a. You kind of over the top killer, and then you know there's this whole scene that takes place in a liquor store. You know, Harry is he's gonna take them out, stop them from doing the hostage situation.
Think of that. Like I can't help but compare this movie to Magnum Force because I watched Magnum Force right before it. It's like think of the bit that they had early on in Magnum Force where it's like. There's like these terrorists taking over a plane and Harry gets in the plane and is pretending he knows how to fly it. Like, I don't know, just everything was just more interesting and better conceived in the one before this. Like, this is just like going back to basics and...
Yeah, it's like we've made Harry into like... I mean, he's a rogue cop. Like, that's kind of been established at this point in the series. But like, yeah, like you said, like in Magnum Force, like he's sneaking onto a plane. He's doing like outlandish things that work for that movie. Here it is like back to Dirty Harry. He's just a cop. He's a crazy cop.
It's not imaginative.
He's going to stop a robbery in a liquor store.
And the other thing is like, I forgot the name of the director that did Magnum Force, but I saw someone on Letterboxd being like, oh, you know, he's just another journeyman director that they got for these movies. And I'm like, I don't know, compared to The Enforcer, Magnum Force, I thought was doing cool, interesting zooms. Like, he was, like, mounting the camera on the side of motorcycles. And, like, there's interesting directing in that second one. And this, like, I don't think any of it looks particularly exciting or inventive. Like it just feels like you're watching a cop TV show, like an old cop TV show.
That's exactly what it feels like. It feels like your 8 o'clock primetime cop show.
Yeah.
Granted, like, you know, it probably doesn't make 1976 television, but that's kind of the feel. Is like this old-timey cop show. It's goofy. It's like the writing is over the top. And Harry is just like a massive, massive asshole through like 70% of this film. there is a weird, weird scene here. It is like this super slow foot chase, where it's right when the bomb goes off. The terrorists have hired somebody. He brings a bomb to this municipal building and sets it off in the bathroom. Harry and Kate notice this guy outside, but they're not really like they don't really like they recognize him. They kind of acknowledge that he's there, but they don't really put two and two together until after the bomb goes off. Then they chase after this guy. Is so slow. I wrote down it's the weirdest. It's like the weirdest score for a foot chase ever.
Dude, the score in this movie sucks. One of my notes here is super 70s score that is kind of bad. That's my note. Like,
yeah.
Yeah. And also, before that chase starts, she notices the guy, like, walking out, and she tries to, like, run up and tell Harry, and she gets, like, shut up, the men are talking.
Yeah.
And then finally they, like, you know, like, they're done talking. She's like, I saw the guy just run. He's like, well, why didn't you tell me? I'm like, what the fuck, dude? What is this?
It's like, why is it so goofily done?
Yeah.
Like, he's supposed to be this competent cop. So, like, even if he doesn't believe that she is of, like, that she's basically putting herself in danger, and maybe him in danger, he would still listen to her and be like, oh, okay. Yeah, like, you're not bothering me. Like, I understand what you're trying to say. Instead, he just, like, knocks her off, and then he goes on this, like, slow-ass foot chase that takes way too long. And she is running underneath them because, like, they've eventually gone to the rooftops. And she is running underneath them as, like, comic relief. It's, like, makes no fucking sense.
I think we lost our recorder. Do you still have your backup recorder?
Yeah, the backup's still
going. Okay.
Oh, Craig, you suck.
Yeah.
But anyway, yeah.
I guess there are a few things that happen, but man, it's so unremarkable. Like, we watched these films weeks ago now.
Yeah.
I'm surprised I remembered anything. Like, I'm surprised I recalled, because that was not in my notes, like, her running up and being, I just remember it striking me so weird that they don't let her talk. Like, why wouldn't she just be like, no, you have to listen to me. This fucking, there's the guy. Like,
yeah.
I don't know. It's stupid. It's silly.
I think it's badly put together. And the last note I actually have here, the last note I have here is, how are we 2/3 into this and nothing has really happened? Like, yeah. And that's really what it is. Like, nothing has happened in this movie up until, like, basically, the mayor is at a Giants game at the ballpark, and he leaves early, and then they take him hostage, and from there things start to pick up. You know, Harry works with he works to get the black militant leader out of jail, which gets him some weaponry. From there, it's like they end up on Alcatraz. There's I don't think the shootout there is bad. I think it actually kind of saves the film.
The finale is, it's fine. It's fine 70s action.
Yeah, like it's not mind-blowing, but, like, you know, considering when it was, like, this actually looks pretty good.
You got some explosions, you know. It's going to get blown out of the water by our next movie, I'll tell you that much. But,
yeah.
In terms of the action as well as everything. But,
like, they use Alcatraz pretty well, I think. You know, it looks funny, good though, for what it is.
The very end of it is, like, there's one main villain left, you know, and he starts running up this tower, and I'm like, where the fuck are you going, dude?
Right, like, he's dragging the mayor up by his hair,
you're going, like, up a tower to nowhere.
Like, granted, you're on an island, you're not escaping.
Jumping the water or something,
like,
I don't know.
Yeah, but you're going up this tower with that, and he leaves the mayor on, like, a ledge at some point, like, because the mayor's, like, stumbling along, so he just leaves them there, and Harry grabs, like, one of these rocket launchers.
Yes. So, you know, that's, like, pretty cool action for the end of a 70s movie, though. You get a rocket launcher blowing up a tower. I don't know.
Yeah.
It's just, and then that's kind of the end, right? He goes and checks on his partner, and she's dead or whatever.
Yep.
Right?
Yeah.
That's kind of it.
Yeah.
And he's like, I think he tells him to fuck off again, like he does at the end of every movie. Like, here's my badge. I'm throwing it in the water. And that's kind of it.
Right. Yeah, that's it.
Is that right? Yeah, yeah. I don't know, dude. This movie was very much hurt by me watching Magnum Force before it, I think.
I could definitely see that, because Magnum Force has a super interesting villain. Like, I mean, it's a trio. Yeah. It's more than a trio.
You don't know that. So. You think it's... Dude, it's... First off, the beginning of that fucking movie, this cop pulls over... I forgot who, like someone big, and he fucking just blows away this whole car of people, and you're like, whoa, what the fuck is going on? Like, yeah. This cop looks like the fucking cop from Terminator 2 riding around on his motorcycle, and he's just fucking blowing people away. And what Part 2 did was, I thought, really smart, kind of turning the politics of Dirty Harry on its head. Like, Part 2 was a reaction to what critics had to say about the original, that it was right-wing and reactionary, you know, basically propaganda or whatever. And in Part 2, they're like, well, what if someone, like, what if there's a villain? What if we made the villain somebody that takes, like, the Dirty Harry mindset too far? And I thought that was an interesting play on everything that the original was about. Yeah. And here... The enforcer, it just goes back to, oh my God, women are joining the police force. It just goes back to the formula established in the first one, and just with diminishing results, I thought. This is probably one of the least memorable to me. That's my thoughts on it. I don't know.
The first one's fine for what it is, 1971. Yeah. Magnum Force, very good. I still think that holds up. And then I think they get progressively worse from here on out. Like, it's like...
I would take Sudden Impact over this. I really would. This is just... It's very generic. Like, this is a very...
Yeah, at least there's an interesting concept behind Sudden Impact.
Doesn't that one end up at the carnival or something?
It does. It's so dumb.
I love like carnival shit. So just having that.
Yeah, you think he ends up killing him on a roller coaster or something like that?
Yeah.
It's just visually more interesting than this too. Like, this has a cool setting, which is unfortunate because it does have a cool setting. It's just not used very well. Like, they use Alcatraz decently. But San Francisco is an interesting city. You could do a whole lot more with it. And they have a lot that they could do with it. You have terrorists threatening to blow up parts of the city and take people hostage. Like, you could have done a big thing at Candlestick Park, like at the baseball game. Like, be way more interesting than just, we're going to kidnap the mayor and take him to an island. An island prison at that. Like, it's something. This was a film, unfortunately, like, you know, we both said it, like, not a lot going on in it. Because of that, there's not really a lot to talk about with it. Like, it's just...
Well, we managed to go for a little bit here.
It's just a film that exists.
it's unremarkable. It's very much... like what you would expect going into watching an old Dirty Harry movie, I think. But again, because I watched the second one, which I think is actually pretty fantastic and kind of holds up, this is just like, it was such a letdown watching this right after. I was like, oh man. And this is the one that like I had not seen in the longest. So I just had high hopes that it was as cool as Part 2, you know?
Yeah, maybe that's why that might be why I came off a little bit soft. Like, talking about it now, I don't think I'm as high on it as I was. Not that I was super high on it anyway, but yeah, like I watched all five basically within a week of each other. I went. There was like that ebb and flow, but there wasn't that. I haven't seen this in a while, and I'm coming off the strongest one. Kind of saw the progression. Like, it wasn't as jarring to me, maybe. And I don't have, like, I know of Dirty Harry. I'd seen that first film, but I did not have the, knowledge of the other films going in. So,
yeah.
I don't like Dirty Harry. I think that's what I mostly came out of this endeavor with.
I'm a fan of Clint Eastwood. I don't like these movies like I did. It's weird. Like, the things that you love when you're really little, like, revisiting them, you don't know how it's going to turn out, right? Like, something is maybe better left in your memory, because revisiting this series, I think it's forgotten for a reason. Like, I think that by the time 4 and 5 came out, that they felt ancient compared to their contemporaries. Like you said, you have Beverly Hills Cop and shit like that. That just, that stuff is still fun to watch. And this is...
Yeah, just like the fact that 5 comes out in 1988.
It's amazing.
And it is sandwiched between Lethal Weapon and the original Die Hard. It's like, this is a bad movie compared to them.
You had RoboCop in 87, I think, the year before.
Yeah.
Think about it, like the commentary that had about police.
It's
another Dirty Harry movie a year later.
Yep.
By the way, did you see the thing that happened on Twitter? There's some stupid main character on Twitter every day. Like, someone says something stupid. And a few days ago, it was someone saying that RoboCop is copaganda. Did you catch that one?
I think I saw one of the people I follow that's more involved in film Twitter.
Yeah.
I think she mentioned something, and she's like...
How do you miss the point? Yeah.
Like, the whole point of it is that, yes, it's like mocking copaganda. Like, it's mocking that whole thing of militarizing the police industry.
Yeah, it's like, the point of the movie is, like, yeah, it's basically run by a corporation, and... They're out to protect the interests of the corporation. How is that propaganda? Like, what the fuck are you talking about? I don't know. So it's just, there's some idiotic take every day on Twitter that everyone shares. And I try to not. I like to be positive for the most part on Twitter. Yeah. Like, there's enough negativity as there is. So I try not to share all that stuff. But
you just can't engage.
That one I almost did, like, make fun of, because it's just so fucking hilarious that someone like misread RoboCop that badly. But anyways,
well,
we're done with this one.
Right? Yeah, we're done with the Enforcer. Let's do ratings here, Jeff. What say you?
Yeah,
on the Enforcer.
I gave you my opinion about it. I think it just feels very standard, generic, and it goes back to the politics that the second one smartly did something with. It's a 4 out of 10 for me. I was surprised how mediocre I thought this one was.
I'm gonna slightly more positive than you. 5 out of 10. I don't recommend watching it though. Like, it's something that you can leave in the past. Interesting note on Magnum Force. It was co-written by John Milius, who did Red Dawn. he also did that first person shooter Homefront. He also wrote that. He
wrote that? Oh, wow.
Yeah. Tying it all together. So that brings us to The Rock.
His name is John Mason, British national, incarcerated on Alcatraz in 1962, escaped in 63.
There's no identity in the United States or Great Britain. He does not exist. Secrets have a way of coming back to haunt you.
There's a hostage situation on Alcatraz.
Hostage?
81 tourists.
The Rock's a tourist attraction.
The one you train to defend you becomes your greatest threat.
A battery of VX gas rockets is presently deployed to deliver a highly lethal strike on the population of the San Francisco Bay Area.
And the one you abandon becomes your only hope.
You go talk to him.
Me?
Yeah.
Hiya. I'm an agent with the FBI. I'm Stanley Goodspeed.
But of course you are.
At least he got his name right.
Now, all that stands between a city and a disaster.
The power of this chemical is way beyond anything you can imagine.
That's why you're coming with us.
Is a man who's never seen combat.
You're a chemical freak. I'm a chemical super freak, actually.
And another who's been out of action for 30 years.
Show us on the blueprints.
I can't. My blueprint was in my head.
Fortunately, some things you never forget.
But don't worry. It'll all come back to me.
From Don
Simpson and Jerry Bruckheimer, the producers of Top Gun and Crimson Tide, and Michael Bay, the director of Bad Boys.
Welcome to The Rock.
We got visitors.
Sean Connery.
I'm sure you're ready for this.
Do my best.
Your best. Losers always whine about their best.
Yeah.
Nicolas Cage.
Listen, I'm just a biochemist. I drive a Volvo. Beige one. So what do you say you cut me some friggin' slack?
Ed Harris.
Fire.
Directed by Michael Bay. Michael Bay's second feature film, I believe, after Bad Boys.
Okay.
So, like, right before... Like, this is actually kind of the... This may be the film that kind of blows him up a bit. And he goes on a run of, like, big, gigantic feature films from here on.
It hasn't really stopped.
Yeah, I mean... Armageddon, Pearl Harbor, Bad Boys 2. He's done some like little stuff in between there, like The Island, Pain and Gain. But then he kind of went on like this tear where he just did Transformers movies.
And I think that's, you know, his movies are goofy, but I think that's where he kind of became more of a punchline.
Yes, because like
I like him.
Before Transformers, it was like. The end joke, like, he was doing, like, those Verizon commercials and shit where, like, he's blowing stuff up with tigers and...
Yeah. Like,
but Transformers, I think, that series, not necessarily that first film, but that series is maybe what turned some people on him.
It's, for me, like, I like Michael Bay. I like that type of... It kind of reminds me of, like, what we were talking about at the top of the episode. Like, he reminds me of the same vein as, like, Roland Emmerich. It's like, it's going to be big, it's going to be dumb, and it's going to be fun, you know?
Yeah.
But, like, just for me personally, like, I just couldn't get into the Transformer shit, and so I fell off on him big time. Like, I think I've seen half of the first Transformers movie. Like, I turned it off. I was like, this is boring.
Yeah, that's fair. Like, if it doesn't click, I have seen all the Transformers movies. I think the first one is maybe the only one worth watching, so...
I didn't like that. But and then now he's getting back. Like, he did that Six Underground, which I thought was terrible, but some people do really like.
It's not great, but it's at least something original and kind of fun.
His new film looks awesome.
Yes, I am big on Ambulance. That movie looks amazing. Looks a lot of fun. Comes out relatively soon, too. So.
Yeah.
Yeah, I mean, I think the guy has a sense of what he's doing out there. Like, he knows how to make big, gigantic blockbuster action films. And generally, when they're not Transformers, I'm on board. The Rock, though, 1996, summer movie, June 7th, 1996, budget of $75 million. Came out end of the day, $335 million take at the box office. It's undeniable blockbuster of its time. The cast in this movie,
I was surprised.
Is amazing. Sean Connery, Nicolas Cage, Ed Harris, William Forsythe, Michael Biehn. I mean, there's
like Michael Biehn showed up. I was like, what the fuck, dude? Like, right? That guy hasn't been in any movie since like Terminator. He hasn't done shit, but here he is. Fucking that Woodbine dude. You got Tuco from Breaking Bad in this. Yeah. David Morse, John C. McGinley. Like, I don't know, dude. This cast blew me
great.
Away.
Great. And they work real well together. Like, real, real well. I think Sean Connery and Nicolas Cage, as we talk about the film, they have a great chemistry going on. I think Ed Harris and Tony Todd, and I'm trying to think of who the other guy who works with Ed Harris on the bad guy team. Dave Morse.
David Morse. Yeah.
Yeah. Like, they all have great chemistry too. Like, it's believable. Like,
you got peak Nicolas Cage here, like at the height of his fame, firing on all cylinders, giving us the full Cage, and the chemistry between him and Connery couldn't be better. It's so much fun. I'm telling you, like, clearly, I wasn't joking when I said our next movie's awesome. I'm so happy you chose this, because I have not seen this since it came out. And I was just surprised constantly how good this movie is.
Let's jump into this movie here. Like, it starts off with a heist where, you know, Ed Harris and his group of disgruntled military guys, they break onto a military base and steal this what's called, they call it VX gas. I'm not sure what the hell that really is, but it's like this chemical.
Secret of the ooze.
Yeah, it's this chemical weapon that is super secret, and because Ed Harris's guy is a brigadier general. He is able to kind of get onto this base no problem and basically steal it. Like, that opening heist is a ton of fun. It's energetic. It looks great. It's stylish. It's also super fucking gross. Like, when they have to one of the capsules for the VX gas basically ruptures. Yeah. And you only have, like, seconds to quarantine yourself from it. They have to lock this guy into the chamber, and blisters, and, like, basically he just becomes, like, all oozy. Oh, it's gross. Super disgusting.
I just, what was it with the 90s and green fucking glowy?
Yeah.
I don't know. Another awesome thing, in my opinion, about it. It's like another check.
So then we cut from there to you meet Nicolas Cage. He is a scientist for the FBI. He is their top chemical weapons specialist, Dr. Stanley Goodspeed. And he, you know, they have to do this sequence where they get this package that may be some sort of biological agent. And they have to go through and disarm this bomb, basically. Cage is in full-on Cage mode from the beginning. Like, he is off the charts here. That whole gas sequence is fantastic. The dialogue, I think, is great. Like, his, like, assistant guy is hysterical. This movie is filled with awesome one-liners throughout the whole thing.
I shortly after that, when he's, like, alone with his girlfriend or whatever, Cages,
mm-hmm.
and he goes on this rant about how he shouldn't bring kids into this world, because yep. this world sucks. And then she's like, well, I'm pregnant, and he's like, I didn't mean that. She's like, I forgot how it went, but he's like, I meant it at the time when I said that. I didn't mean it now. And she's like, you said it, like, 1 minute ago. Like, what are you talking about?
Yeah. Really, it's funny, very on point. That whole pregnancy scene is hysterical. It's, like, so well written, excellently delivered by both Cage and Claire Forlani as his girlfriend. Just, like, really funny, really well put together. And then he gets called in because, you know, the military finally figures out they've received the demands from Ed Harris's General Hummel, and he's called to San Francisco. He thinks it's just like an exercise. He tells his girlfriend to come along, not knowing what's up. And then that's when we finally meet Sean Connery's character. Mason. who is this MI6, ex-MI6 guy who has stolen some secrets of the U.S. government. He's basically been locked away for 30 years.
They don't tell you at all, like, I don't think they tell you that the MI6 stuff is until way later.
No, no, yeah, it's not immediate. Like you don't.
You know this guy's somebody, and yes. He knows Alcatraz. That's why they need him. Like they do tell you that he broke out of Alcatraz.
He's the only person to have ever broken out of Alcatraz and have survived. But you don't know all like the backstory. You just know him and the FBI director guy here. They have history.
The FBI director guy, I think that's William Forsythe, which is another person. I'm like, dude, like, I don't know. They keep fucking busting out these awesome character actors in this. I'm like, what the fuck, dude? Anyways.
Yeah. they're interviewing Mason, and not getting anywhere, right? They're trying to strong arm him. It's not working. Finally, they send in Nick Cage, who, this is not what he does. He is a doctor. He is a chemical weapons guy. He doesn't know how to talk to prisoners. And he just wings it not well. and we quickly learn that Mason is deadly. Give him anything, and he's going to MacGyver his way out of it, because he like basically leaves a quarter, I think, on the table. Yeah. And he steals the quarter, smashes it, makes it sharp enough that he could take down the glass, and then breaks through to get at the FBI director.
When it's like Forsythe like throws the quarter on the table, and at first I'm like, "What is this weird close up of this quarter? Like, why did they do that?" And immediately you realize, "Oh yeah, because this motherfucker is gonna use it."
Yeah, he's a master escape artist.
You immediately love Sean Connery in this role.
Yeah.
At least I do. Like, you know what I mean? Like, it's just, he's just perfect in it.
He's great. And then, like, he makes his demands. They are like, fine, whatever. Like, we'll meet your demands. We're going to get you a haircut. Going to put you up in this nice hotel room. And then shit starts going off.
You get this big action scene early on that has nothing to do with anything. It's just him trying to escape.
It's a chase sequence.
It's probably the best one, like up there at least, like one of the best ones in the film. Like it's huge and it's long and it's out of nowhere. Again, it has nothing to do with anything.
It doesn't. It is vintage Michael Bay. He is great at high speed action stuff.
Yeah.
And the rest of this film takes place in Alcatraz. Like, it takes place. You're not going to have anything that's high speed. You're going to have stuff that's more choreographed and strategically planned. Yeah. So he gets his fun in here, where it is this high speed chase through the streets of San Francisco.
You do get like some weird minecart shit inside Alcatraz at one.
Yes. Yeah. There's some weird stuff.
It's like, what are we in Indiana Jones yes. all of a sudden? What the fuck is going on?
There's definitely some cliche nonsense going on. And before even that happens, there's some Indiana Jones bullshit. We'll get to that in a moment. Great car chase here, though. Through the whole thing, Goodspeed catches up to him. He actually uses his brain to figure out what's going on, where he's going to end up, because Mason gets away. But he understands why he's where he's going and does good detective work, figures it out, and then kind of befriends Mason in a way, gives him some cushion and doesn't embarrass him in front of his daughter, that we find out that, you know, his daughter's never really met him because he's been in jail all this time. But he's given like this buffer that's like, yeah, he's helping the FBI. Like, we're not here to chase him down. We just need him really badly. And then that's where finally we're going to break into Alcatraz. And that's where kind of the fun starts. Like, there's this, you know, stealth operation to break in. They go underwater, they go through a vent, they get to this, it's like a boiler room, I believe. And this is where the Indiana Jones shit starts, where Mason has to basically, like, time his rolls through this fire pit.
Oh, yeah, yeah, yeah.
It is, it's nonsense, but it's fun, it's exciting.
He took off again, aren't they? Like, for a second, and then he just goes to the door.
He unlocks the door. Oh, it's like, where the hell is he going to go? Like, he's locked himself in there with a bunch of terrorists.
And they got this whole team with them here. Like, it's like 12 dudes or whatever, right?
Yes. Yes.
They that lasts for, like, one more scene.
Yeah, they have this, like, and I think it's Michael Biehn's team, right? He's the leader of this special forces team, and they break in. General Hummel and his group of, he keeps calling them Marines, but I think Tony Todd is eventually going to correct him, Captain Darrow, and say, oh, we're fucking mercenaries. Like, we're here for money.
Where's the money?
Yeah. But he doesn't say that yet, but
great part at the end, though, what he does. Yeah. He flips, and, like, Tony Todd, like, you think Tony Todd is just, like, casting this really small role, but he ends up becoming kind of the main villain at the end.
Yes.
Because Ed Harris was bluffing.
Yeah, he was never going to fire weapons on the U.S.
Ed Harris really believed in what he was doing, and he thought he could get the U.S. government. I don't know if we've even explained what their motive was.
Yeah, well, I don't know exactly where that happens in the film where he explains exactly what's happening.
They do explain it, yeah.
But, basically... General Hummel reaches out to the U.S. government to kind of tell them what's going on, and why, and what he wants, makes his demands. And he wants, like, $100 million, of which most of that money is going to be spread out to people that served under him that were killed in basically illegal actions.
Yeah, it's like soldiers, basically secret soldiers who died and never got the honor that they deserve. Like, I think so that the families aren't even informed what happened to them.
Yeah.
They don't get a burial, military. He's pissed off about these soldiers just not getting honored by the U.S. government.
Right. Like, they're just, because we've sent them on these shit-ass missions that they shouldn't have been doing.
Yeah.
But they did it because they believed in the cause and they believed in the government. And then they die. And you don't even compensate them. Like, their families don't even get death benefits. You act like they were criminals and they were doing what you wanted.
I don't know how true any of this is. I'm probably either shit like this, but it's a cool premise. I think it's, like, a cool premise for, like, the bad guy.
What it gives
you kind of sympathize with them a little bit.
Exactly. He has a reason and it makes sense. It's not like, I'm just going to do bad, evil things. Like, no, it's like, I understand why he's doing this. It's wrong, but I get it.
And Ed Harris is so good in the role that you kind of, like, don't hate the guy at all. You get where he's coming from 100%.
Right.
But,
So, like, as, they're making their way into Alcatraz, and, Ed Harris's team has all the latest gadgets and shit. And Michael Biehn's team is trying to make an entry into this shower room, and they set off an alarm. And it creates this standoff where Ed Harris's team has the high ground. Basically, they're all on a balcony ledge, and Michael Biehn's team has come up into the shower from underground, and they are basically at the mercy of Ed Harris's team. And shit goes bad. Shots get fired.
Standoff. Yeah. Cool standoff there, and cool, like, dialogue between the two.
Great,
like,
great speech.
We're soldiers. Yep. We can't back down. And then the other guy's like, "We're not backing down either." Like, I don't know. It was like, "Oh shit, shit's about to hit the fan," and it does.
Right, and like
just the two guys, like, our main characters, basically.
Like that Michael Biehn's entire team gets killed, and it is left to Mason and Goodspeed. And Mason just wants to leave. Like, smartly, too. Like, I don't want to hang around with these fucking crazies.
Yeah.
And Goodspeed is like, no, we have to do this. Like, if we do not do this, everybody in San Francisco is going to die, including us, because we're going to be there. Yeah. Your daughter's going to die. My girlfriend and my unborn baby's going to die. And we're probably going to die. So he convinces Mason, and they go on this, fun adventure of going underground in Alcatraz. There's a minecart sequence, like you said. Makes no fucking sense. But it's fun. And
from here on, my notes become very thin because I'm having so much fun watching the movie. It literally, my notes from here on are just funny, like, quotes that I thought were funny. Like, and there's a lot of them.
Oh yeah, there's great. Like, I was doing the same thing, except I did reach a point here, probably around the same point you did, where I said, my last note here is, fuck it, I'm done with notes. This is great.
Yeah. There's not much else to be said. Like, yeah, it's like you said, now you're getting like this fun action adventure shit, them crawling around inside Alcatraz.
Cat and mouse with the terrorist or the mercenaries that are up above. Excellent, like, cool lines. One of my favorites before that is when Ed Harris actually, their team takes over Alcatraz, and he like tells the little girls, like, tell your teacher you need to go back on the boat and go back across right now. Like, so like there's a heart to him, like, you know that. But then there's these adults that are on, like, on this tour. This guy in the back, like, what kind of fucked up tour is this? Like, there's just some like great lines throughout the whole thing.
There's a conversation between Connery and Ed Harris, and then what I wrote down is Connery tells him, "This is not combat. This is an act of lunacy, General Sir. Personally, I think you're a fucking idiot."
Yes. Like, I don't know, it's like, yes.
Shit like that. I think there's a line, I didn't write down who said this, but I think it might have been Nick Cage, and he goes, "In retrospect, I'd rather have been a poet or a farmer." I don't know if he says that or Connery says that. One of them says that, and the other person is just like, okay. I don't know. Just like, you're just, it's fun. The movie's fun. It's playful. Like, it's always making sure you're having fun, whether it's a fun line or a fun action scene. Or, honestly, I think the script is kind of smart for what it is. Like, it's dumb, but it's smart. Like we already touched on, like, the villain, they smartly, like, give him a good reason. And, like, you kind of get why he would be doing what he's doing, you know?
There's a reason for everything that's happening. And, like, yes, the stuff is outlandish and is completely, it's complete lunacy, just like Mason said. But it's a good time. Like, it is classic action filmmaking. And it is done to near perfection.
Near the end, we get a rocket again in this one. So there's some connective tissue between these two movies. But I think it's Nick Cage telling Tony Todd before he shoots him with the rocket that he's the Rocket Man.
Yes. Oh, it's so good. It's like, do you like Elton John? And he's like, says something along the lines, "I'll listen to that soft shit."
He's like, "Well, you're the Rocket Man." He blows him away with a rocket, like, shoots him out of a window.
Listen,
it's fun, man.
Oh, it's so good. Here's the quote. It's like, "Listen, I think we got started off on the wrong foot. Stan Goodspeed, FBI. Let's talk music. Do you like Elton John's song, Rocket Man?" And Tony Todd's like, "I don't like soft ass shit." And he goes, "Well, I only bring it up because you're the Rocket Man that pressed." Perfect. Oh, so good.
That's kind of our big ending right there. And I think at this point, Nick Cage has to, like, inject himself with the fucking antidote or some shit in his heart, right?
Yeah. So, like, that's a callback from the beginning where they're like, you have to inject this in your heart because it'll keep you alive so you can continue to do your job and maybe also save your life as it's going on. Yeah, that's fun. A really funny scene in the morgue where Mason's killed one of the mercenaries, and this foot is just twitching, Like, he's trying to disable the Goodspeed is trying to disable the bomb. He's like, you know, what's up with that? Like, what, the feet thing? He's like, yeah, that happens. Like, well, can you do something? And Connor's like, what, kill him again?
Like, that's one of the lines I have written down. Yeah, what do you want me to do? Kill him again?
Oh, like, yeah, this movie is so much fun. I think the ending is great. Like, it does have that great standoff where, you know, visually it's stunning. Like, he lifts up, like, they're about to blow up Alcatraz, and he, like, lifts up with the flares, and he's, like, running the green smoke. They still fire off, like, one rocket, which, you know, causes a huge explosion, but it's great. Like, it's so much fun. And then it ends on that whole, like, you know, Mason was MI6, and he stole some secrets. Yeah, so it ends on, like, lies. That, yeah, this fun little conspiracy thing going on.
Yeah, he lets him go. He says, oh, he got blown away. What did he say? He got turned into, like, mist or something?
Yeah. Yeah, he's like, he disintegrated or...
Something like that. He got
vaporized.
He got vaporized, and they're like, oh, okay. Like, they just accept that. look how much we're laughing talking about this, like, dude. It's fucking great. Like,
oh, they're like, I'm just, like, looking at some quotes right now, and there's you know, after Goodspeed and Mason, they both get caught, and they're both in a cell, and he's, like, trying to, like, hey, like, you know, you did all this nonsense, like, you had to go through the incinerator, you had to go through the mine car, like, how the hell did you get out of your cell, though, because that might come in handy right about now.
Yeah, and that's my note for that section is Cage asking how he got out of his cell, going full Cage. Like, you know, he's doing his Cage bullshit. Yep,
he's slowly ramping up, like, it starts out. Yeah, like, yeah. And then he's just, like screaming. Like, so good. Yeah, this is, I think, if anybody that's been listening to our, like, this phenomenal film, we really enjoyed it.
I don't see a lot of horror connection here or whatever, but, you know, we open it up to kind of do other things sometimes. Yeah. I do think if you're only a horror fan or whatever, I don't think there's a lot of people that are only horror, but there are. I think you'd still enjoy this if you've never seen it. It's just, it's a fun time, you know?
Yeah. I mean, the most horror-y thing in either of these two films is in that opening heist sequence where,
yeah,
you know, they have to lock that one Marine in the containment thing.
Decent,
and, like,
decent, yeah, gore kind of effect there. Yeah.
But yeah, there's outside of that, not a whole lot of horror going on here.
Hey, you know what? You opened it up even more for me to go crazy with future choices. So, and look, dude, I'll tell you right now, the highest thing I've ever rated on this show was I gave Mandy a 10 out of 10. That was Nick Cage. Nick Cage is about to get, like, another super high. He's going to have, like, the two highest rated films on our show, for me anyways. I loved this.
Yes. Me too. This is a phenomenal film. I've always loved The Rock. I have not seen it in a few years. I've seen it more recently than you. Yeah. But going back to it again, like, it's a film that is just insanely fun. It's insanely quotable. It just gets action right. Like, it does just about everything correct here. So, I had a ton of fun rewatching this. I'm glad we added action films into the mix.
Yeah. And, you know, for me, it was almost like watching this for the first time. It had been so long. I remember, you know, I remember the general premise, and I remembered that I liked it a lot. You know, but, you know, we're talking mid-90s, so I didn't know what to expect, really, going back into it. I'm like, ah, does Michael Bay hold up, and this and that, and fuck, man, I had so much fun with it. You want me to give you my little summary and rating on it?
Yeah, yeah, please.
I think that this is maybe the best action movie of the 90s. I think there's these action movies that come around and they're like this a turning point, like this inflection point. You know, I think in the 80s, Die Hard, you know, you had Terminator, then Die Hard really kind of set the course for action for like a decade. And I think that this was the next, you know, the next one. And it went for a while after this where you were getting the Michael Bay style action movie.
Yeah.
You know, I think in the 2010s you had like The Raid and you had John Wick that, you know, now if you put out an action movie, it has to have some really fast martial arts in it, you know, like crazy choreography. And I actually like I think that's my preferred. I think The Raid, the action in that is just incredible, and I'd love seeing movies like Nobody like copy that, or even Shang-Chi copy that a little bit, you know.
Yeah.
But this, again, bringing it back to what we're talking about, I think The Rock, it might be the best action movie in the 90s. It's just such a fun time. Great chemistry between Connery and Cage. I'm a big fan of Nick Cage, and it's awesome to see him at his height here.
Yes.
The fucking endless supply of character actors in these bit roles in this. Kind of a smart script for a dumb action movie. I don't know. I really don't have many bad notes for this one. I'm going to give it a 9.5 out of 10. I think this movie's really great.
Yes, I fully agreed on everything there. I am right there with you. I think I have to revisit some other 90s action films, but I think you might be right. This may be the one. And for me, like, like where you prefer like that kind of more hand to hand, intimate action.
I like, you want to see like something like, blow up.
Yeah, I like high speed car chases. Yeah. Like it's got it here, and I like shit blowing up. And
Shang-Chi does a good job of mixing those in that one bus scene.
Yes.
You know,
yeah.
You're getting this awesome high speed chase mixed in with really cool martial arts.
Yeah, it's a good mix. Yeah, that
it's like you know how I feel about Marvel movies. I don't like them. That was pretty cool.
And I think that and the side of the building scene in that one are very good.
Oh yeah, I think it
falls off a little bit after that, but neither here nor there. But yeah, that's the stuff that I want to see. And give me stuff that is fun and quotable.
Yeah.
Last Boy Scout, Die Hard, Lethal Weapon. I mean, that's also kind of that's the stuff like, you know, that mid to late 80s, early 90s. And then, you know, this was when I graduated high school, so it's all like the formative section of my life for films. And yeah, this it's near perfect for me. I'm going to give it a 9 out of 10. Nick Cage is excellent here, and I'm hoping we're seeing a revitalization of him very shortly.
Cage? I think you were in it. I think we're in the Cage of Sans. I think
people really liked Pig.
Pig last year. He's really great in it. I think Bandy is an all-timer. You know,
yeah.
He still does a lot of straight-to-video stuff that, you know, I think that Prisoners in a Ghostland was one of the worst movies I saw last year. He also did that Willy's Wonderland that some people seem to like. I thought it was just okay at best. Did you see that one?
I did not. No. You were not high on it, so I was like, I don't know. I like the idea. I like the concept of it. It looked really cool, but yeah, just, I'm not sure.
It's low rent. It's just people standing around in a room. Anyway.
I am very much.
He shows up. He shows up no matter what it is. It's like he's always going to add something. You know.
He does almost always bring it. It's like he does not phone in his roles. I'll 100% give him that. I am really looking forward to the unbearable weight of massive talent.
I don't know what to think of that one, but I'm sure I'll enjoy it just because it's Cage.
It looks absurd.
I really don't. But, yeah.
Yeah. And I am hoping that we're seeing a return to form for Michael Bay as well this year.
Yeah, I think Ambulance is going to kick ass. It looks like Michael Bay doing Heat. Like, how do you fucking lose with that? Like, it just looks so fun.
Right.
I love a good heist movie.
Heists are great. It's going to be, it's going to have, we know there's going to be cars flipping and shit blowing up.
Yeah,
so
yeah. It's just, I'm going to see it. It sounds like this is an obvious winner here. The Rock wins.
Yeah.
We did do a poll. Not a lot of votes for whatever reason, but Rock took it 100% in the poll as well. So
not
this is a no contest situation here. Fucking Dirty Harry gets his ass kicked. The Rock is a great movie.
I will say, like, I mentioned, I came out of this going, I don't like Dirty Harry, I think. And I think that's fine. I am glad that, I paired these two together, though, and it gave me a chance to revisit the Dirty Harry I had seen and see that series. I don't think it's vital that anybody sees it, but as somebody that likes action movies,
it's an excuse to go through it.
Yeah, it was a good reason to visit it.
I'm thankful you pushed me to watch Magnum Force.
Yeah, I'm glad you watched that one. At least you got a good Dirty Harry, the good Dirty Harry movie.
Yeah.
What do we got for next time, Jeff?
So we're gonna bring it back to horror, at least sort of. It's a little weird. Our theme next month is gonna be evil kids movies. That's evil kids plural, not an evil kid like the good son.
Multiple evil children.
Yeah.
Okay.
And while there's plenty to choose from within the genre, one of these is definitely a cheat and not a horror movie. But it's scary to me, and it's an excuse for me to watch it again. It's a movie I really like. So I guess I'll start with what that one is. One of our movies will be Larry Clark's Bully from 2001. And then our other evil kids movie, which is much more traditional horror and terrifying, and I've also seen, is Eden Lake from 2008.
I don't think I've seen either of these, although I do know of Eden Lake. I believe you have talked to me about that one before.
All right. You've never seen Bully?
I don't believe I have. Maybe Bully. Watching it, I'll be like, oh, I have seen this. But
Bully's Larry Clark. He's the guy that did that movie Kids from the 90s.
I do know that one, yes.
Yeah. Have you seen Kids?
Yes.
Okay, so you have an idea what to expect out of Larry Clark. Now imagine him doing, like, an evil Kids. It's one, I think a lot of people now are, like, uncomfortable with Larry Clark for the same reason they're uncomfortable with Euphoria. It's like a running joke that he's a pedophile or something. But again, these actors are adults. Although in Kids, I don't know that they all were. I don't know. Who am I to say? But Bully, pretty mixed thing on, but I do remember at the time Roger Ebert calling it a masterpiece, so I always feel in good company when Ebert is on my side.
It's a good cast of at the time, young actors.
So, both for you and people listening, like, these are both pretty available movies. Bully is currently on HBO Max as well as, I think it's HBO Max. Eden Lake's all over the place. It's on Tubi. It's free. So hopefully they'll be around for another week or two, as we got to record the next one of this soon to get back on track. But
yep.
Yeah, that's what we're going to be back with for March. A couple of evil kids movies. / one of them sort of not horror, but in my opinion, still very scary.
Looking forward to it. Join us in March for Evil Kids.
Ooh.